Well, I like to, you know, like I'm on the chat room at the Tom Hartman program that's on Free Speech TV. And it is fun to
interact.
To put your two cents in and know that someone will respond back to you and you're being listened to and answered back. Which doesn't happen too often on the Christian streams, I must say. They kind of ignore Merlin there.
I wonder why.
I wonder why. Yeah, I've been told, why do you have that picture of that demon on your logo? And I go, that's not a demon. That's a red dragon. That's in the same flag Wales has. Unfortunately, it's also a red dragon. The Book of Revelations represents the devil.
The devil.
It's the rising Chinese.
Hold on here. So I'm drinking coffee. We do a laid-back show. And what's the date, Hans? March?
It's the 14th.
March?
Yeah.
Yeah, March 14th, 2021.
It's the 4th.
Hans got his, stimulus check. I'm still waiting for mine.
Yeah, and I voted for the other guy.
Hans voted for Trump, and I voted for Biden. And I'm still waiting for the stimulus check. Nancy Pelosi got hers, because I've seen her on TV going, it's arrived.
Maybe it's not as biased as I thought.
I don't know. I'm losing faith in anybody that sits in that fucking White House, man. Anyone.
Well, I lose faith in someone who won't face the public and answer questions like
Trump.
Herr Trump did, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't want to answer fuck. You can't blame him. I think he's in trouble with the law now. The state of New York wants to arrest him for a whole bunch of shit.
I'm talking about Biden not answering questions.
I haven't heard about that. Wait a minute. I don't want to get caught up in politics yet. We're starting the Idle Hand Show.
Yes.
And Hans and I are rusty as DJs. We just got the equipment working again. Thank you,
Rusty,
Maitreya, Maziars. Maitreya Maziars. Our old sound guy from the TV station, the TV show, Idle Hands, which we did for, 17 years?
I only did about 10.
Only 10. I think Dolly did 7 or 8. Anyway, this whole show is dedicated to a doctor that, he's like a real cool brother to me and a good friend, and his name's Dr. Randy. I don't think I need to say his last name or anything.
Yeah, just call him Dr. Randy.
Well, he doesn't even want me to call him Dr. Randy. He just wants me to call him Randy.
You're a dandy, Randy.
He doesn't want me to call him doctor. He's not that formal. But anyway, he just had
aorta. First lady.
What do you call that thing? Aorta?
Aortic valve?
Yeah, he had that, rupture.
Ooh,
so
that's not good.
Operate, and it's successful, right? I mean, he's back at work, but, of course he's taking it easy, but, it's not like being a doctor. It's not like digging a ditch.
Yeah.
But, it's hard because that was major surgery. So, Randy, if you're out there listening to this, we love you. We pay for you all the time. You're in our hearts. And anything we can do for you, you let us know. So the reason I'm mentioning old Randy and this whole thing probably embarrassing him is because we're dedicating this whole show to him.
Yeah, you're kind of embarrassing me since I've never met Randy, huh?
Well, he's Jaimal's doctor, Iris doctor, my doctor, I think he's even seen Dolly.
Wow.
So, you're the ones left out.
Yeah, I need to see a doctor.
And coming up next on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it's the Thursday, September 23rd edition in 2021 of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. A little rushed today, and we may be getting the show out a little bit late. My apologies. But what we're going to be working on is sort of an update based upon the latest Huff meeting and what we learned from Monica Tone of the Pajaro River Homeless Union, part of the California Homeless Union, and a threatened sweep, which is threatened to occur tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday night, the 23rd, on the 24th, which has really caused her some anxiety, so much so that she trooped all the way over with her bicycle from Watsonville to Santa Cruz and joined us at the Huff meeting around 11 o'clock in San Lorenzo Park, right between the benchlands and the courthouse, where we regularly hold our 11 o'clock Thursday meetings. And sort of as a look back and comparison, we have a couple of flashbacks. One from the discussion with Homies for the Homeless on the Club Cruise show, which was a protest at City Hall, where there was, a 7-day and 7-night sleep out, essentially trying to demand that the mayor implement the Jones decision that was happening in Los Angeles, and essentially told authorities, or was in fact, well, our authorities ignored it, but it was telling them that you can't arrest people for sleeping unless you have some place for them to sleep. Sleeping itself cannot be a crime, something that has sort of been a cardinal speaking point of Huff for decades, and of course has now been made even more part of the legal structure for the moment by the Martin versus Boise decision. That was, of course, that's been some 11 or 12 years later. And we also have another episode, the audio version, the audio section of the Voices television show. Club Cruise was a television show as well, which talked about the essentially the lynch gang headed by the city council and the police. It went after Tony Madrigal for daring to suggest there might be racial profiling in the Santa Cruz Police Department. And that was around the same time, the same year, as the Homies for the Homeless show that happened. And the Homies for the Homeless protest and its subsequent discussion on Club Cruise. But first, let's listen to a bit of the discussion by Monica Tone of what is, according to her account, being threatened in the Watsonville Pajaro River area to the dozens of people who live in her camp that she's lived in for 8, 9, 10 years. But, listen on and you shall hear.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So if you can forgive the background noise, today is September 23rd, I guess, and it's around 11:10. We have Monica, Gloria, and Robert here, lone Huffsters. But Monica, you came all the way from Watsonville to report some not-so-happy news.
I'm Monica, and I'm from Watsonville. I'm the president of the Pajaro and Watsonville homeless community. And on Monday, the sheriff's department came down to serve people, serve certain people, because they didn't serve all of the people. They served certain people these flyers that were eviction notices. And the thing that bothers me about this is they deal with the community. Nobody in my community has had COVID or dealt with COVID or has been exposed to COVID or even came close to it. And here's some officers that are coming into our community, and I feel it's very dangerous for us, for my community, because these people deal with the community. In Monterey County, it's known to have COVID. The jails right now are infested with COVID. And
were they masked?
No, they weren't masked. But they came down and they only gave certain people these eviction notices. My house is the only house that's on top of the river. It's the first house that you see when you go onto the river. And they didn't come to my house. They didn't knock on my door. They didn't put no flyer at my door. No eviction notice, no nothing. But they did, you know, to certain other people. Alongside the eviction notices, it states vehicle codes. It's not even, like, properly written. But they're coming on Friday. It said Friday after Friday that they're going to start
tomorrow
arresting us. Yes, they're going to start arresting us and stuff. I've been on the river for almost 10 years. I've been in the same spot that I've been at since they came and took our place in December. When an officer told me and a few of the community members, women at that, that he offered us permanent housing. He said he's going to make sure that we get permanent housing. Well, the spot that he offered it to me is the spot where I stayed. So like an hour after that offer was on the table, he came back saying, sorry, there's nothing that we can do. We're going to bulldoze your house now and take everything that you have. And exactly what happened. So the spot that he told me that is the spot where I reside.
When was this, Monica?
And this is December 2000. Of
20 years ago or 1 year ago?
1 year ago. 1 year ago.
2020.
I know. And see, in the summertime, they don't come down there to go do nothing. They haven't came down. This is the first time that they're coming down there to evict us after they have destroyed our community last year. So now that, you know, we got fall, spring, winter, you know, like, sorry, the winter's coming, and, you know, they want to start taking from us. When it's cold, you know, when it's time, like, this is the time where we're going to be getting sick. People get sick during this, you know, this time of year. Not only that, like, last year was very, very cold, and this year right here, it's going to be even colder. So they plan on taking our stuff again, and, you know, Monterey County, these officers are cruel. These officers are very, very mean. They're disrespectful. They don't care. They're not somebody that abides by the oath that they supposedly took. You know, these are takers. So they'll be probably coming down with Smith and Inlight, and I think Smith and Inlight Construction. They're the ones who are
doing the demolition.
Yes, that do the demolition. But these officers, like I said, they pick and choose who they want to give these flyers to, and it's not okay. You know, they gave a pamphlet, and the pamphlet has resources. The resources is probably like three resources, and the resources that are on these papers, it's ridiculous. There's only two of them that even are in existence. Like, there's a motel, the key or whatever thing. You know, they have that, but that
room key.
Yes, but that's, they pick and choose who they want to, you know, who they want to live in those communities.
How many people would you say got notices?
I'm gonna say about maybe 40 people, but out of these 40 people, some of them can't read and write. Some of them don't even understand what the pamphlet's even stating. Except for the arrest part, you know, that's the only thing that they can really understand is that they will be arrested.
When did this start?
This started on Monday, but...
No, I mean, when did this start tomorrow?
It said at 8 a.m. Now, alongside them giving these little pamphlets out, they've been taking pictures of them. Like, you know, they tell the person, well, here's this eviction notice, but we need to take a picture of you so we can show proof of them being served. And some of them, community members, are saying that, no, I don't want you to take my picture. And they're still doing it. So... Yes, this is the Monterey County side of the river.
Is there? I know you've mentioned in the past, Monica, that you have essentially kind of three different villages in a way, or divisions. One's Monterey County, one's Santa Cruz County, Watsonville, and the other is in the middle of the river. Is there a chance that you can move to? Can the encampment move over to the other side, or is it also being threatened? Or
it's also being threatened. So on the Watsonville side, they consistently come down and remove people's belongings and disrespectfully removing people's belongings. They don't give notice. They don't have anybody that comes down there. There's a health service lady that says that she comes down there. She does nothing but lies, and nothing that she says is even of truth. She didn't even know who I was, and I walked up to her, and I was telling her, you know, asking her questions, and this woman's going to tell me how she comes down. She wasn't there when I first got there, let me add. An officer had to call her in order for her to come down. Twice he's done this, and I have it on video. She comes down, and she's trying to explain to me how she comes down there. Before the demolition starts, she comes down and has these little resource flyers out that she has in her hand when she shows up. Well, I tell her, I've never seen you down here. She asked me, well, when do you come down here? I told her, I live down here. And she asked me, well, how long have you lived down here? I said, I've been down here for 9 years, and I've never seen you down here giving anything. And I said, all I see is you coming here after the houses are removed is when I see you come down here. Now, I need to know, and I told her, I said, I need to know where my community members' belongings are, because you guys are supposed to store their belongings for 90 days. So I need to know where you're storing the stuff. And she's like, well, I don't know. I said, and you know, you're from Santa Cruz Mental Health Services. I need to know where our bathrooms are and where our cleaning supplies are and where's our, you know, our stuff for our health, you know, because this is a known homeless community, right? She's like, yes. And I go, well, since it's a known homeless community, how come we don't have porta potties like Santa Cruz County does? Because you're a Santa Cruz County human service worker, but yet, you know, I don't see you providing anything but lies, you know. But my main issue is my community, and they don't. A lot of them are scared. A lot of them don't speak English. A lot of them work during the day, you know, hard work, you know, in the agriculture fields, you know. And it's not okay for us to keep on being bullied and, you know, and taken advantage of. It's not okay at all. Right now, the community that we have on the Monterey County side, we're really tight knit. And at the same time, like, we make sure that we keep it clean down there. We make sure that, you know, we don't just go out and steal from other communities. We don't do that around there. You know, we make sure that if anything's going down, we make sure we get rid of the bad. You know, and these officers that are coming down, like I said, they deal with the community, the outside community of what's called Monterey, Watsonville, they deal with Salinas, they deal with Monterey County Jail, and I know that it's on the news, and it states that Monterey County Jail inmates have COVID. They're on lockdown, and this is not okay. It's unacceptable for these officers who are ungloved, okay, and unmasked to come down and try to infest our community. It's just not okay. Plus, leave us with nothing, no blankets, no nothing, no houses, no tents, no nothing. Not even no resources, because the resources that they say that they have, they ain't even real. They're not real. Provide me with something that's going to help me today before you take my place.
Now, you received this notice on Monday.
I didn't receive this notice. My community members have received this notice.
And you noticed that they noticed or informed you that it was being posted on Monday?
Yes. So it's not posted up where people can see it, where, you know, where the public can see it. It's posted. They're handing them to the people and taking pictures of the people. It's not posted. And they did not put one on my door and my house. Like I said, it's the only house that you see when you go onto the Monterey County side of the river. My house is the first house. It's the only house on top.
And what's your speculation, Monica, as to why they skipped you?
Because they don't want to hear my mouth. They don't want me to record them. They don't want me. They don't want me to put them out on blast. And they're on blast because I have pictures on my Facebook, and you can go on my Facebook. It's Monica Tone. Under Pajaro River Homeless Community, you will see the pictures of what Monterey County Sheriff and Smith and Enlight Construction have did to our community. Last year, all they did was trash. They didn't pick up nothing. They picked up our shelters with a claw. They came down. Anything that fell out of the claw, they left it for me to pick up. And I'm still burning the debris that they left behind.
So, last time this was threatened in, I think it was December or maybe later on, when some of us from Santa Cruz visited you in solidarity, or at least to witness what was going on, they kind of backed off and they stopped what they were doing. Has there been any indication of solidarity with allies from other communities, whether the Homeless Union or the groups that Wes White is associated with?
Well, you know, Wes is wonderful. You know, he's always been right there. Yesterday, because I haven't been home, I've been out here because I wanted to make sure I came down here to be a part of this HUF meeting today, because I need support, you know.
And Wes White is president of the Salinas Homeless Union and very active, as regular listeners know, if you listen to his reports from around the state and most particularly from Salinas, where he's ever ready with his video camera, and he often has come to Santa Cruz in the last few years to document the struggles of the homeless folks here and those who are supporting them. He was available later on in the HUF meeting. We actually contacted him on the phone. You'll be hearing some of his conversations about this. One of the great problems in dealing with attacks on homeless encampments when they're threatened with eviction by police is the police take their own time, and often they prefer to frighten homeless people away rather than have to show up and incur the expense and the paperwork of actually going through the entire business, bringing in all the vehicles, bringing in the crews. They're going to have to do some so-called cleanup or demolition anyway. But if they can get homeless people to move, then they also avoid the prospect of real resistance, where resistance usually means protest, verbal disputes, sometimes people simply refusing to leave, and sometimes the community coming in, as we did in Santa Cruz in December, to simply confront the police and say, no, unless you have a place for these people to go, you better go do some deal with some other law-breaking activities. Don't attempt to destroy this community and the homes of these folks who don't have anything else. But you never know when the police are going to be coming. They can delay it, and strategically this, I think, has been done well, whether strategically or inadvertently, in different sweeps that have been done throughout the country, but I think particularly probably been true in Santa Cruz as well, that the threat is often more powerful than the execution. But in any case, the threat doesn't mean the execution's coming down, so it can be hard to mobilize folks to come on down to be supportive if you can't even be sure the police are going to be coming. And the police can also alter their schedule and say, oh, there's going to be a lot of protests. We'll come back the next day and see if these folks are still gung-ho to get up at 8 in the morning. As for we're paid, you know, $30, $40 an hour to do this, but they aren't. And people, volunteers, aren't. And, of course, volunteers do not have the advantage of a whole legal system skewed in favor of property owners and city and county and state bureaucrats who essentially kind of make up the rules as they go and choose the appropriate laws that fit to take whatever actions they particularly find suits their particular objectives at the moment. Now back to Monica Tone and the HUF meeting.
And I feel like, I mean, I know I do a lot for my community, and I know that they need to step up too, But if my voice is not heard, then I don't, and then it, something terrible is going to happen, and nobody's going to know nothing, you know. And if I have to be the only voice that's going to be heard, and let it be, but I'm not going to go out without a fight.
I hear you. Has there been any indication that you're going to be getting any assistance from any of these other groups?
All I can do is, I can't go into the future, but, you know, all I can do is hope that something happens, you know, that people do come down and people do support, you know, my community, because, like, we need it. We definitely need it, especially if this is unjust. It's not cool. It's just how, I don't understand how they can come down and just take, you know. These officers are uneducated about the river. They don't know whether if it's private property or if it's public property. They don't even know where the high water mark is. But
and it was a little difficult to get a straight answer out of Monica around what kind of support she expected. And it turned out that even Wes White wasn't clear about the kind of support that he needed to ask for, because they couldn't really get a strong answer about whether this raid, which was threatened on at least two postings that were put into the hands of Monica Tone through other people, was actually going to be happening, or these postings are legitimate. But towards the end of the Huff meeting, Wes did contact us again and said he had spoken to authorities, and they assured him, whatever that's worth, that in fact this raid was going forward at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning on September 24th. The Pajaro River, and that is indeed what we know so far. Here's a little more from Monica.
It's trying to tell us where to be, you know, like, where's the high water mark? That's what I want to know. I'm asking them. They don't even know. The high water mark's at the top of a bridge, and we don't even live by the bridge, you know?
What's the significance, Monica, of the high water mark?
So the high water mark just states how high the water can get, but it also, they just want to keep that flow. They want to keep the flow of the high water mark clear. So they don't want no camping under no bridges, is basically what I've read in my education that I've got off of the Pajaro River. They're trying to claim that Pajaro River is the Monterey County side of the Pajaro River is private property, which is not. It's public property. It's public domain. They recently just put another fence up near one of the entries, so I mean, it's pretty hard for even the officers to come onto the river right now. But it's been really, really mellow. It's been really mellow. There hasn't been minimal crime. You know, last year we did have a few deaths, you know, and that's the outside coming into our community. It's not the community members doing it to each other, you know.
My mind is wandering here. Have you been offered, or have any of the people who were the recipients of these flyers and the, you know, the get out demands of the sheriffs or the Watsonville police, whoever's doing it, have they been offered any alternate housing, alternate shelter, whatever?
Yeah, they've been offered Monterey County Jail.
So jail is the only offer.
That's the only offer that I've heard of. They said if we are on the property, if we are a nuisance, if we are a public nuisance, so if it's public nuisance, then that must be public property, right? So this is what I'm trying to understand. So if I'm being a public nuisance, you know, and if I'm a vehicle code and I'm, you know, violating those things, I need to know what type of stupidity do they think that we are, you know what I'm saying? Like, do they really think that this is, do they really think that it's okay for them to go and just look on the internet and pull up anything? They don't even know nothing about the river. They have not educated themselves on the river, where they're going and what they're doing, and they don't know anything about it. I've been there for 10 years and they can't tell me nothing.
And of course, perhaps even beyond what Monica is saying, going after someone for camping, which is what they're doing, although probably using different pretexts like public nuisance, so I don't know, environmental hazard, safety if the river rises, who knows what. But still, the Martin versus Boise decision in Idaho ruled, in essence, you can't do that. Authorities cannot do that unless they have some decent indoor shelter as an alternative for people. Otherwise, you leave them alone, particularly, you know, in the middle of a COVID crisis. That wasn't the Martin versus Boise. That was more the Center for Disease Control's shelter-in-place advisory. And so it seems that if Monica is accurate, if her fears are justified, and that's what the police are likely to do, and if indeed that's what they did last December in spite of Martin versus Boise, then you have an example of authorities wantonly disregarding the law as laid down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which, of course, you might think is an open and shut case. But as I pointed out to her later in the meeting, it really depends on getting the case into court, mustering your arguments, getting the appropriate legal ducks lined up, so to speak. And that, you would think, would be easier. But, of course, we don't learn how to do these kinds of lawsuits in grade school and in high school. Instead, you know, they put us to work on algebra problems. We don't learn basic issues about medicine and law, which might help us get along in society, unless you go in for some specialized training to become a part of the, what I would consider the exploiting class of attorneys and doctors, who have a very special, privileged position in the society. But actually, when we're talking about just basic human care and the ability of people to get along and the ability to protect your own rights, it shouldn't be the function of a special Praetorian guard to do that. And you shouldn't have to pay extravagant amounts of money to do that. At least it's always been my feeling. But we are in the situation we're in. And hence, this is what you hear from, quite appropriately, from Monica Tone.
About that river, I don't know. I mean, they don't even know what a high water mark is.
What's the reaction, Monica, of the people who are being told to leave?
They're scared. They're coming to me. They're frightened. They don't know what to do. You know, it's another sweep. Last year was the coldest, and they took everything from us. Everything. I had what was on my back, you know, and somebody had to come and bring me a tent. And, I mean, I froze. The day before, the day that they took our stuff, that night it rained, you know, and the rain's coming, the cold's coming, the snow's coming, the frost is coming, you know, and this is not okay. In the summertime, I can see them coming down to clean up, you know, but we keep it clean, so there's no reason for them to come down there and clean up.
How many times has this happened to you in the past? You say you've been living there for 8 years.
I've been there for 10 years, and I've never had, Monterey County is the only county, the only side that I've seen disrespect, not care, not have any kind of, they don't care. They don't care.
How many times have they swept in those 10 years?
I'm going to say, on my side, I'm going to say about, well, last year was the first time that I was involved with the Monterey County sweeps last year. It was
and
the first.
Is that because they just happened to miss you on the prior sweeps, or that really was the first sweep that happened?
That was the first sweep that I had been involved in the last 10 years on the Monterey County side. The Watsonville City side, I guess it was like maybe 2017 was the last sweep that they did on the Watsonville side. They never really swept down there. It wasn't the way how it is right now, and I just think that it needs to stop right now. We have shelter in place still. Monterey County and Santa Cruz County. We both have shelter in place. We have shelter in place orders right now, and for them to not even take what CDC is trying to say, you know, like COVID is a killer. It's killing people. It's not a freaking joke. And here we have, like I said, we have these officers with no gloves. We have these officers, when they do have gloves, they want to throw it down on the floor anyway, you know, and leave them right there. You know, and I told this officer the other day, I said, pick up your gloves off the floor, because that's COVID right there. You got to wash your hands and all that stuff. Take that stuff with you. Take your trash with you, because I'm not going to pick it up. You know, like, they're just so disrespectful. They don't care. They have no social distancing. They don't talk. They don't talk to us. You know, like they're there to protect us. They don't talk to us like we have sense. They talk to us like we're nobodies, like we're scum.
Again, have you gotten any response from the Copwatch folks in Monterey or Salinas in terms of possibly organizing resistance or at least witnessing and documentation to what's likely to happen tomorrow morning at 8, assuming they're not bluffing, which, you know, they do that too.
See, on a Friday, I don't really know why they would come or pick a Friday to come out, because if they're coming to take our stuff, the landfill, they're not going to be able to take our garbage. They're not going to be able to put the garbage anywhere. They're not going to be able to put anything anywhere. So I don't understand why they're trying to say Friday they're coming. Because
one reason Friday is chosen, and some of us speculate here when this happened in the past, is if they threaten to arrest you on Friday, it means you stay in jail all through the weekend.
But you know what? I'm willing to stay in jail all weekend. I'm willing to fight for not my pride. I'm willing to fight for my place that I live, my shelter. You know.
Right, but you haven't gotten the notice. It's the other people who have the notice.
I haven't gotten a notice, but this is my community, so I'm a part of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And there's no way that they can't just pick and choose who can stay and who can go. This is my community. You know, and I'm gonna just like any neighborhood, any homeowner, you know, they're going to fight for the community. They're going to make sure that, you know, their neighborhood's safe. They're going to have that neighborhood watch. And the same thing for me. I'm going to watch my neighborhood. I'm going to make sure that my people are okay. I'm going to make sure that my loved ones, because we are family. We're family down there. We're gente. We make sure we stick together. And regardless of what these officers want to come down and do, all they're doing is trying to destroy.
And let's take a musical break here. Lighten up just for a moment with Mark Levy and the title song to his, gosh, I guess it's his 90s, maybe an 80s cassette, Take Off Your Clothes. And we can relax for a moment.
The Israelis have a nudist camp on Taba, right by Egypt on the Gulf of Aqaba. Bathers sunning on the beach were dangerously within reach of Muslim guards patrolling near the spa. And now it says to cover up in the Koran, but those Hebrews hung it out to get a tan. So for fear of getting heated, the Egyptians just retreated, which provoked this novel thought for a peace plan. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff, and strut your stuff. The sight of muck will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now the colonel of the Egyptian police platoon made this comment as he peered beyond the dune. All these sabras on the Sinai really look a sight to mine eye, though I think we'd better take some action soon. As he turned, he saw the men of his fine crew, field glasses trained on each attractive Jew. So he went and gave the order to redefine the border 100 yards down farther from the view. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. You can unveil a devastating offensive. It's healthier than war and less expensive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff, and strut your stuff. The sight of muck will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now here's the surest way to end a running feud. Simply approach your adversary in the nude. If he or she's approved, they'll think it's lewd and move away. Who knows, they might be in the mood. You win either way. So if you're fighting and you just can't take it, you just might try your luck at standing naked before they have another riot. Northern Ireland should try it. The whole world could ease its tensions if we'd only undertake it. I'd propose this brand new cure for hot disputes. Have the warring parties meet in birthday suits. Imagine how a summit conference might progress. Formalities abandoned as each delegate undressed. No harm in getting back to bare essentials. World leaders must admit it has potential. For uncovered, one can make appeals to what the other side reveals and see they're not so different after all. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to hold the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get results if you disrobe. Relations can improve around the globe. Oh, yes, indeed. Relations will improve all over the globe.
Yeah. And that was Take Off Your Clothes to Those You Oppose. Mark Levy. Pretty good lyrics. Let's hear a little more of Monica Tone, though. I think she's pretty much given us most of the essentials, but a bit more.
It doesn't make no sense. These men have these officers take an oath to protect, but it was really an oath to destroy. You know, I wonder, like, when they did take that oath, did they put their hand on the Bible and take that oath, or did they just put their hand up in the air? Because it's null and void if you didn't put your hand on the Bible. You know,
your hand up your ass is what they do.
No, they can, but leave me alone, because I do have rights. And actually, I read online about L.A. They just came up with this, thing. The federal judge just passed this thing where it said anything that a homeless person has is theirs, whether it's a bulk bed, whether it's a tent, whether it's a shopping cart. If they have it, it's theirs. They don't have the right to take that. They have no right to our stuff. They have no right, you know?
Of course, they can always claim it's stolen.
No, they can't.
Or it's unsanitary. Abandoned. Or abandoned, yeah.
Well, my house is not abandoned. I have my stuff in there.
It doesn't meet code, Monica. I'm sorry. You have to put some plumbing in there before we can let you continue.
Oh, I got plumbing in there.
Oh, no, it's not painted the right color, Monica. I'm sorry.
You know what? I'll put a fluorescent pink so you can see me more.
Yeah.
You know?
West
came down yesterday. I wasn't home, like I said, and my sister...
Why to the Monterey County Homeless Union.
And he came down yesterday to show support and to get the flyers and, you know, to see firsthand. He's always firsthand. He's had my back through mostly all this. And I'm grateful for him because he teaches me things, you know, and he helps me stand up for myself and he helps me stand up for my community. And, you know, and sometimes he's a little wild, you know, but he gets the point, you know, sometimes we do need that power. We need that ambition. We need the people who actually been through all this before, you know, to step up and, you know, and say, hey, this is not okay. This is what I can do. Because, you know, anybody who comes and participates, you know, in helping to stop the sweeps, you know, it takes a piece of my heart.
And looking down into the LA area, just to kind of reference the decision that Monica talked about in terms of protecting homeless property. Here's an article from the GD Supra website. Court prohibits Los Angeles City from summarily destroying homeless individuals' bulky items. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decisions in Martin versus City of Boise and Levon versus City of Los Angeles significantly altered how municipalities can regulate public camping and related activities. As a recap, in Martin, the court held that the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, not good, prohibits the imposition of criminal penalties on unsheltered homeless persons for sitting, sleeping, or lying outside on public property. Subject to some exceptions, Martin prohibits jurisdictions from enforcing camping ordinances when the number of homeless individuals in a jurisdiction exceeds the number of available shelter beds. So it's not just we can get a bed for you as a particular person, but if the number of beds is less than the number of homeless individuals, no, you can't go after homeless people for sleeping. Levon concerned enforcement of a city of Los Angeles ordinance, and this, I think, is what Monica was talking about, Levon versus City of Los Angeles, that prohibited leaving merchandise, baggage, or, quote, any article of personal property on parkways or sidewalks. The plaintiffs, a group of homeless individuals, alleged, among other things, that the city violated their Fourth Amendment rights, that's the right to be free from unlawful searches and seizures, by summarily seizing and destroying their momentarily unattended personal property, which included personal identification documents, family memorabilia, portable electronics, blankets, and shelters. The court rejected the city's argument that the Fourth Amendment allowed the seizure and destruction of the plaintiff's property, characterizing that argument as, quote, an invitation to impose an unprecedented limit on the Fourth Amendment's guarantees. Instead, the court held that the city's seizure and immediate destruction of the plaintiff's unabandoned property was unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. Garcia versus City of Los Angeles is the latest development in this area. In this case, the Ninth Circuit determined that municipalities may not summarily seize and destroy even bulky items of personal property left on city property. The bulky items controversy. To set the stage, the Los Angeles Municipal Code, like many other city codes, includes regulations governing the storage of personal property in public areas. At issue in Garcia was a subset of such regulations related to bulky items, so-called. Subject to limited exceptions, the bulky items provision authorized city personnel to, without notice, remove and immediately destroy any attended or unattended bulky items stored on property owned, managed, or maintained by the city, that is, roads, sidewalks, and median strips. The LAMC, Los Angeles Municipal Code, defined bulky items as, quote, any item with the exception of a constructed tent, operational walker, crutch or wheelchair that is too large to fit into a 60-gallon container with the lid closed, including but not limited to a shed, structure, mattress, couch, chair, or other furniture or appliance. A group of homeless individuals filed a lawsuit alleging that the bulky items provision on its face violated the Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable searches and seizures and the 14th Amendment's guarantee of procedural due process. The district court agreed, concluding that the plaintiffs were likely to succeed on their Fourth Amendment and 15th Amendment claims. The court issued a preliminary injunction on the city's enforcement of the bulky items provision. The city appealed. The Ninth Circuit's analysis began and ended with Levon. That's the court decision. The court observed the facts of Levon were strikingly similar to the facts now before the court. That is, in both cases, city employees acting pursuant to a city ordinance seized and summarily destroyed homeless individuals' property that was momentarily unattended. The court concluded it saw no meaningful distinction between the destruction of property enjoined in Levon and the destruction of property under the bulky items provision. The fact that the plaintiff's property in this case was larger than 60 gallons did not reduce their possessory interest in those items. As such, the court concluded the plaintiffs had demonstrated a likelihood of success on the merits of their Fourth Amendment claim and affirmed the district court's grant of a preliminary injunction. Takeaways from Garcia versus City of Los Angeles. Takeaways from Garcia versus City of Los Angeles include the following. Size is irrelevant. Municipalities may not summarily remove and destroy homeless individuals' personal property that is stored in public. The mere size or volume of personal property does not change the result. Not addressed, property removal with notice and storage. The court did not rule on the constitutionality of ordinances that provide for the removal, notice, and storage of personal property. Variations of such regulations have been crafted and upheld by district courts. Truly abandoned is another story. The court emphasized that its decision applied to unabandoned personal property. Garcia does not limit or restrict municipalities' ability to remove and dispose of abandoned personal property. And we're not done yet, they conclude in this article. The items, the issues addressed in Garcia will almost certainly be faced by future courts. Courts will likely be called on to further harmonize the constitutional rights of homeless individuals with actions taken by municipalities to further legitimate local interests, e.g. decreasing fire risks, protecting safe passage on public rights of way, and protecting critical infrastructure. And that, again, is an analysis headed, court prohibits Los Angeles City from summarily destroying homeless individuals' bulky items. And unfortunately, there's also some bad news from L.A., which I just noticed. U.S. court ordered to house L.A.'s Skid Row homeless overturned. An appeal court found extensive error by Judge David O. Carter, who is overseeing a major lawsuit about the problem. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on Thursday overturned a federal judge's sweeping order that required the city and county of L.A. to quickly find shelter for all homeless people living on downtown Skid Row. The appeals court found extensive error by U.S. District Court Judge David O. Carter, who is overseeing a major lawsuit about the problem of homelessness in Los Angeles. The appeals court found that the plaintiffs, that is the homeless people trying to get housing, lacked standing to bring most of their claims in the lawsuit, and that the judge, Carter, the lower judge, based his preliminary injunction on claims and theories that were not made by the plaintiffs. Skip Miller, the lawyer representing the county, said he is grateful the Ninth Circuit ruled in the county's favor by vacating the district court's sweeping injunction based on an abuse of judicial discretion. The county will continue with its massive efforts to address homelessness as it has all along, he said. Yuck, yuck. We appreciate where Judge Carter is coming from and look forward to working with him to find a solution to the lawsuit. Still, the LA Alliance for Human Rights, which brought the lawsuit, vowed to continue fighting homelessness throughout the city. We are pleased to see the Ninth Circuit has identified a pathway to hold the city and county accountable for their failed response to LA's homelessness crisis, the organization said in a statement. The court issued a narrow ruling this morning focused on procedural steps in the case, but not the underlying law, it continued. We are greatly encouraged because the issues identified can be quickly addressed, and we look forward to returning to Judge Carter's courtroom in the coming weeks. Carter issued the 110-page order in late April that slammed local officials' inability to restrain the unprecedented growth of homelessness that has seen encampments spread into nearly every neighborhood in the region. All of the rhetoric, promises, plans, and budgeting cannot obscure the shameful reality of this crisis. That year after year, there are more homeless Angelenos, people in Los Angeles, and year after year, more homeless Angelenos die on the streets, Carter wrote in his ruling. The order gave the city and county 180 days to house homeless people on Skid Row and to audit any spending related to the crisis of people living on the streets. The lawsuit was brought by a coalition that includes business and property owners, landlords, and others who allege that the inaction by the city and county, Santa Cruz, take note, on the problem has created a dangerous environment. The appeals court said Carter's order was premised on the findings that structural racism was the driving force behind the Los Angeles homelessness crisis and the disproportionate impact on the black community, but none of the plaintiff's claims were based on racial discrimination. To fill the gap, the district court impermissibly resorted to independent research and extra record evidence, the appellate decision said. In other words, it all might have been true, but it wasn't put originally into the original lawsuit, and so the lawsuit failed. So what that means is perhaps they have to go back and put it in the lawsuit next time. As of January 2020, there were more than 66,400 homeless people in Los Angeles County, with 41,000 within city limits. While the homeless population was once largely confined to the Skid Row area, rows of tents, cardboard shelters, battered RVs, and makeshift plywood structures are now familiar sights throughout the nation's second most populous cities. That's an NBC News story. For what it's worth, U.S. court order to house L.A. Skid Row homeless overturned.
It's not... Like, I don't feel like anybody should disrespect somebody for what they are, what color they are, where they live, what they ride, what they drive. It's not about that. Life's not about that. It shouldn't be about that, because that brings hate and animosity, you know? And, I mean, I like my things. I work hard for my things. You know, I don't just, I'm not saying that I'm the most perfect person in the world, but I know for a fact that I don't deserve my things to be taken. I deserve to be able to rest my head at night. I think it's in our constitution that we're able to have shelter, you know, and we're able to obtain shelter and not have our stuff taken. I mean, these officers are going to go home. These officers get to go home after they destroy my house. These officers get to go home, and they don't have to go home with no remorse, you know? They don't have to worry about their things being taken from their house.
How many cops showed up? What day did you see these police?
So Monday morning, I hear three cars drive by on the river by my house. They just passed by my house. Okay, well, an hour later, I hear three cars come back. They do stop. I hear one door open. I hear two door opens. Then I hear the door shut. I'm thinking they're coming to my house. I'm sitting inside my house just waiting. And because I have my recording, I wanted to see if they were just going to open my door.
Describe what your house looks like, Mom.
So my house is made of bamboo. And it has a blue tarp on the top with a brown netting over it. It's visible. It's visible. It's visible from the entry when you come onto the river. So they do stop. They get out of their cars. They don't come down to my place. They get back in their cars and they drive away. They drive away. I was real quiet in my house because I wanted to see if they would open my house up. They didn't. And I think that's because they know that they have to get a warrant. They don't go to Chinatown opening tents unless they have a warrant, which means that they're not going to come into my place if they don't have a warrant.
Now, did you observe them in interactions with anybody else in the community?
I observed them when they first got into the river. I was at Valero's when they first came to the river. They didn't see me. I was scratching my tickets and looking at them and wondering, what are they doing? They're waiting for someone to come and open the gate. Now, mind you, as soon as they stayed there, they went walking. For the first time, they went walking. And so what I did was I rode my bike to my house, and I sat in my house, and I waited because I wanted to see the disrespectful ways that they were going to come onto this river. Because I have something for them. I'm going to continue recording. I'm going to continue fighting. I'm going to continue letting them know that it's not okay.
Did you see any of the interactions they had with any of the other campers?
No, I didn't. No.
Get any reports about whether they went into homes without a request, without asking permission or without a warrant? What kind of accounts did you get from the people, if any?
I was told that they were given flyers, eviction flyers, that had to be out a certain day, and that if they weren't out, that they would be arrested for being a public nuisance. And I mean, so on Friday, you know, tomorrow when it comes, like, I'm going to have to be at my house. I can't even be protesting or trying to fight anything. I have to be at my house worried about my things, and as well as the community members. They have to be at their house worried about their things, because if it goes down, we have to gather what we can so we can have, you know, so we can have something on our back so we can be warm at night. You know, and it's hard. It's hard. It's hard. Like, you know, Santa Cruz, right here at the San Lorenzo, you know, they're pretty much a community that are together. Me, we're out of sight, out of mind. We're not just out in the open. I'm out in the open. Nobody else is out in the open. You know, and
have you talked to any of the other campers about this?
Yeah, we came together a couple weeks ago when we were having the freedom ride, and
they went to Sacramento.
Yeah. I had to stay there because I had to deal with the sweeps on the Watsonville side, you know. And so this is things that are taking out of my life too. Because, I mean, they don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand. They don't care. They don't care.
Have you talked to Anthony Prince, attorney for the homeless union?
Yes, I talked to him a couple of weeks. He came over to our spot to see, you know, what it looked like down there, you know, and he was very surprised, you know, and he's a wonderful man too. And I sent him the flyers. I sent him all the I emailed him the flyers
about this most recent attack.
Yes, I sent him all the flyers showing him, like, this is what they're saying. And I don't understand about the vehicle codes. That doesn't make no sense. I don't understand. How are you gonna try to remove us off of vehicle codes?
Are there any vehicles on the river?
No, only vehicles are theirs. Maybe a couple of people might have a bike or might have like a, you know, a quad or something like that. But that they're not a part of our, they're not a part of us. They're the outside coming in.
Well, you might be interested in knowing, maybe you already do know, that there actually is a simultaneous or very near in time action against homeless people here in Santa Cruz that's happening, assuming I have this with me, which I'm hoping I do. Let's see here.
And I scurried about looking for this copy of a notice to vacate area prior to planned maintenance, which Santa Cruz, not Watsonville, Pajaro, River, or Monterey County is putting out, but is being put out by the city of Santa Cruz, and it's posted Friday, September 20th at 9 a.m., supposedly, and it covers the west and east side of the Santa Cruz River walkway, also known as the levee from Highway 1 to the Pacific Ocean. That's quite a swath of territory. And it says, in the upcoming days, the city will perform significant maintenance and vegetation management in the above-described location. It will not be safe, and this is underlined, to present in the area during this time. Additionally, this area is closed to the public. This encampment is in violation of the camping ordinance. Encampments shall be maintained in a reasonably safe, tidy, and sanitary, hygienic fashion, free from litter and debris and waste. Seems a violation of Martin versus Boise to be enforcing camping ordinances. And this encampment is in violation of another aspect of the camping ban. Outdoor living encampments shall not cause direct damage to the environment through activities such as excavating or terracing soil, harming trees, cutting vegetation, or disturbing wildlife dens, burrows, or nests. Now, it seems to me you could apply this to, oh, I don't know, one or two camps, but to apply it to the entire area all along the levee from Highway 1 to the ocean is quite a reach. The flyer continues, you must vacate the area and remove all belongings before Monday, October 4th at 9 a.m. The city will clean this site on or after the time and date specified above. Unaccompanied items are subject to removal and may be discarded or destroyed. Notice the word here is unaccompanied, not abandoned, but unaccompanied. So if you stay, you're going to be accused of trespass. If you go, they'll take your property. It's quite clever, actually, for getting you to move again to nowhere if you are a homeless migrant. And then there's some small print. For general homeless resources, unsheltered individuals may call such and such a number to set up shelter referral appointments. They'll talk to you about where to go while you carry your tent around with you. And they also suggest leave your name and contact information on voicemail and meet with an outreach staff or shelter referring to the at the downtown library from 1 to 3 and at Coral and Limekiln at 5:45. There's a daily intake with the Salvation Army if it has any room, which there's been some question about. And certainly there's not room for everybody who is in the city as required by Martin versus Boise. So this is another example of Santa Cruz authorities ignoring the Martin versus Boise decision. I was alarmed at this, as it looked like a massive sweep was in order. So then we were approached by Jeremy Leonard. The Huff meeting was approached by Jeremy Leonard, who is sort of the city's man to mediate disputes in the bench lands and kind of keep an ear on things, maybe report back to city authorities. I don't know how large a part of his job that is. But he told us that, no, there's only going to be a limited kind of vegetation management, I guess it might be called. First, they're going to do it between the Soquel Bridge and Highway 1, and the bench land is going to be not going to be the campground. The large campground on the bench land is going to be ignored, and the only people who will be displaced will be 7 or 8 tents that he has already arranged can come into the larger benchlands encampment that was created by the city in response to the injunction that the Union of the Homeless got back in December, or actually January. So that's Jeremy Leonard's take on it, but again, there's nothing written, nothing clear from authorities. And when I wrote back to Keith McHenry, who sent me this flyer, he didn't have any new information either. I'm going to keep looking, and maybe when if I do a show on Sunday, likely, but not necessarily happening, maybe I'll have more information for you. Perhaps we should do, though, is get back to what seems to be a more immediate crisis for those in Watsonville on the Santa Cruz side of the Pajaro River that Monica Tone was talking about. As I said before, towards the end of the Huff meeting, Wes White, who said he originally didn't know whether to kind of call out the alarm to everybody come rushing to support the encampment people on the river, because he didn't know if it was an actual threat or a bluff or who knows what. But he seemed to indicate that he thought there was more reality to it as the Huff meeting closed down around 1 o'clock. So I'm going to try to reach him by phone and see if he has an update. So let's see if we can actually... Wes?
Yes?
I'm recording you because I'm doing an audio for the 6 o'clock show tonight, and I'm wondering... We spoke earlier, you know, from the meeting, and you said you had some information which tended to make you think that the possibility of a move on the Pajaro River encampment more likely tomorrow. Can you elaborate on that?
I'm sorry, I have been able to talk to the sheriff's department, and yes, and also the supervisor Askew's office. They've both confirmed that yes, it is real. It is going to happen tomorrow morning.
Did they give you any indication of what the purpose of this was? I mean, here in Santa Cruz, it's so-called vegetation management that is the basis for at least this flyer that was forwarded to me by Keith McHenry. Do you have any? Did you get any sense of what they're doing and why?
Hold on a second. Sheriff's office says it's collaboration between the Water Resource Agency and County of Santa Cruz in preparation for winter weather.
And what do you make of this?
It sounds legitimate. It sounds like garbage. Shelter in place. This is, what do you call that? You know, but California's reopened. It's still shelter in place, though. And, you know, I mean, you're not supposed to move anybody. But they're doing it anyway, and they're just taking affordable housing. Oh, no. I'm disappointed. But as far as I can tell, there was only one notice on one tent, and then Monica said there was a second notice. But that to me, is not proper notice, because what happened to the stakes? How come you can't see it profusely everywhere?
How many people would you estimate, because you've been down to the camp, I didn't really get good numbers from Monica, will be impacted by this?
Probably a couple dozen.
Okay. And is there any provision here? They have this sort of token provision in the Santa Cruz notice for, you can call this number, you can go sit and wait for a bus that may take you to some sort of Salvation Army shelter. Is there any provision for the folks on the Pajaro River?
The only thing that I've noticed is the notice and then a set of pages from the Coalition of Homeless Service Providers. So call away. That's basically what they do for you.
And what does that mean? I'm sorry. Explain that.
Well, when you get when you call a phone number, you're likely not to have anything actually available.
Now, in the
past... You know, that's every service provider's number, so that way they can say they connected you.
Uh-huh. Now, in the past, you and other organizations have actually, you know, sped out to do video, to document, even to, you know, to interrogate, possibly even to challenge the authorities' move on people in apparent violation of Martin versus Boise and the CDC guidelines and perhaps common sense. But, you know, it's become more difficult, I've noticed, in Santa Cruz to mobilize that kind of response. How have you found that situation in Salinas and Monterey County?
As far as a response, you mean, or what do you mean?
As far as mobilizing
people
a response. Mobilizing a response.
California's pretty open, so everybody has a job. I'm not sure who I'm going to be able to get to go.
Huh.
There might be a half a dozen people, but, you know, I mean, yeah, no, people have said they would like to go but cannot.
Huh. And that's, ironically, even though COVID seemed to have prevented people from coming out, it also provided an opportunity for them because they weren't working to come out?
That's what it feels a little bit like that, yes.
Huh. Interesting. Have you gotten any sympathetic response from service providers who are no doubt alarmed and aghast at this attack on the most vulnerable people? What service providers express concern?
Well, the Coalition of Homeless Service Providers, is its own board as well. So the board president of the Coalition of Homeless Service Providers and the executive director are not exactly pleased. We are in a, I guess they're going to try to revamp the words on their position on sweeps, which is don't do it, but we ain't going to stop you. To don't do it, and here are the things that we expect to see before you even start, and we will stop. So, stopping being such a passive mother, while the abusive father is kicking the shit out of kids.
Well, I know that you... Go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't make mention of that, and it was offended, you know, and good, rightfully so, you know, get your butt in the gear. So, I don't think they want to take that stance anymore, just passively watching people be destroyed.
But I take it you don't expect to see many of them out there tomorrow morning.
Oh, of course not. No, the service providers, if anybody comes, it might be CSU, and be Che, C-H-E, and I cannot, community homeless engagement or something, I'm not sure.
I know that you've also been confronted with sweeps in Salinas, in Chinatown, and along various encampments that were cleared away, the railroad tracks and so forth. Any updates on what's been happening there?
You're noticing tents in new areas, so I gotta stop over and say hi and see if I already know people or not. You know, every established camp except for one has been destroyed and obliterated. There's only one that I can think of right now. It's called the Sliver, or at least that's the city's word for it. And they got about 20 people over there right now, and they have no porta potties, no services. So, how interesting. And I would imagine that's the only reason they're there is because the city's not paying for anything.
Do any of the places where people have found refuge just, you know, escaping or just, you know, migrating and or being driven away from the previous places, do any of those places have access to porta-potties, wash stations, and so forth?
As near as I can tell now, the only place that has any of those facilities is Chinatown. Last week, there, you know, after they did a sweep there at Sanborn Underpass, the two porta potties were still there. That was servicing over 90, 100 people, which is ridiculous. They already got rid of Sherwood Park's one, the one Rico Rossi they got rid of. So as far as I understand, the only one left is Chinatown.
And what's going on in Chinatown? Have people moved back or...
Now they got routed off of the train tracks, so there is no room on Bridge Street or Market Way. They burgeoned on the outside side of the fence of the train tracks. And I don't know where a lot of people are.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any response from any other union members around this issue? I know that I keep referring to a union as though it actually was an existing group other than a sort of a hope for the future, but I'm just wondering because the homeless union actually kind of began in Salinas, as I remember, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, you and Anthony Prince working very effectively for a time to hold back laws criminalizing homeless people, setting up the flagpole community in response, and then, of course, expanding to different chapters, which in some cities have held off harassment by authorities through injunction, through resistance, through and so forth.
Yeah, well, and Robbie Powelson has really been kicking butt, and he keeps on jumping right in front of him. He actually got arrested yesterday for you know, having permission to be the captain on that boat, and Abel just jumped over there and called the Richmond police, and they got him arrested, you know, but he's out again. So, you know, probably get that demurred. Honestly, the Coast Guard is the only one that could arrest him anyway.
And for those who want to see Robbie, you can hear his account just by going to Robbie Powelson on Facebook, and you can see his confrontation with, naval authorities.
Richardson Bay.
Richardson.
RBRC is what it's called.
There you go.
Boating. Yeah, so but they're crushing homes. You know, they're still taking boats, and just so bigger boats can play.
I take it you're likely to be out there tomorrow morning. I of course will be
absolutely
watching you from a with, you know, with my binoculars from 50 miles away in my my doctor's office. What do you expect to be happening, and what do you predict is going to be going on?
I expect there to be an awful lot of tears and destruction. I mean, I'm just going to passively watch. I'm not trying to get arrested today or tomorrow. It's disappointing, you know. So we're probably trying to help people move.
Take it. Well, I will, I guess, leave it at that. Feel free to call in if you'd like, and I will, of course, you've got your own recording devices, and you can be doing that. But if you have anything you want to report, you think that would be helpful, that can be done in an audio way, do give me a call, and I will, well, actually, it'll probably be, you'll probably catch me at a time when I'll be occupied with medical bullshit.
No worries. I mean, I'll just video it, and maybe eventually someday it'll make it on there. My Facebook Live don't work right now, you know, because I post too many horrible things that the cops don't like, so they report me. Things like, you know, United States might be Nazis.
No. Now, come on, Willis. Yeah, how can you say that?
Yeah. Well, look at ourselves. How's that? Because we're liars to the core, and that's the only way we like to do business.
Well, I'm going to leave it there and give you the last word if you have any further thoughts about this, anything you want to put out before I... I guess I should ask you, if people want to go down and be supportive or witness this, how do they get there, where should they go, and when should they come?
So we will be meeting at Linear Park in Watsonville at 7 a.m. We'll head over the river to the Pajaro side, which is the Monterey County side of the river, at about 7:30. And, you know, whoever we have will be there. The sweep starts at 8, but, of course, could start earlier than that. So another reason to try to be there early enough and try to guide people to get over, because Linear Park is about as close a parking spot as we're ever going to get.
And where, for those who don't know, is Linear Park?
100 East Front Street in Watsonville.
Huh. And, of course, it should also be, people should be warned that the police can also do their usual gambit of threatening to show and then showing up the next day instead.
I mean, these appointments are pretty huge jobs of coordination, so I would imagine the scheduling would be really huge if they didn't do this tomorrow. You know, as far as I understand from Supervisor Askew's office, the sheriff's office and the water agency, and, you know, their winter preparation or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was there a similar winter preparation last year?
December 10, December 7 to 10, they had a four-day bonanza of clearing everybody's stuff.
But
last year. And those postings, they were littered with postings. This time around, I could not find a single, I could only find one posting, and that's because somebody showed it to me that they got on their tent. I believe you're supposed to put them on stakes. I believe they're supposed to be profusely littered like a collage of signage.
Hmm.
So I still don't feel like they properly noticed. But obviously they're scheduled, and it is real.
All right. Well, I will. I'll await, I guess, a report from how that goes, and I will pass on this information to anybody listening. If you want, you can go to Linear Park at 7 and proceed from there at 7:30 to. And the ultimate location again is.
Well, it is in the riverbed, so you know it's not exactly. I mean, you can do GPS coordinates to it, longitude, latitude, but in minutes, seconds, but not anything better than that. You know, there is no address to it. It's in the riverbed.
Will anything be posted on Instagram or other media?
It'll have to be done by other folks.
Okay, well, perhaps it will, and if it won't, you still post Santa Cruz County,
Yes.
Monterey County Homeless Advocates, correct?
Yes, eventually.
All right. Well, listen, thank you for keeping up with it, and we'll forgive you for not dotting every dot and crossing every T.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see what we can do. I mean, at least, if nothing else, they know they need to pretend to do better, because they are being video filmed, and I'm hoping that the guy Rogelio will not be there. I'm hoping he's reprimanded, if not fired. But that's doubtful. I'm sure it'll just be, you know, waved away and ignored. But we did turn in an official DA complaint against the business and the city of Salinas for improper notice and theft. So, you know, I'm still going to monitor that because, you know, an awful lot of items that are people's personal property ends up being converted to city property and then ends up being personal property again when the fuckers take them home. So they sidestep a lot. I bet you find a lot of generators, a lot of scrap metal, you know, among all the top employees, maybe even some of the cops.
How can you suggest corruption among our finest? I'm going to leave you with that.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, as they're laughing and yucking it up, you know, and going, hey, check it out. Look at my new souvenir. Where'd you get that? Oh, isn't that supposed to be city's property? Ah, it doesn't matter. Go ahead. Take it home. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keep your video camera running. I'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, Sean.
Here's a musical break. A song called Move, again, by Mark Levy. And this is of a much more serious cast than Take Off Your Clothes, to those who oppose. I'm going to follow it with the audio of a news analysis, a rather superficial one, I'm afraid, of the Move incident, where police essentially firebombed a house and killed adults and children inside. And we're part of an African-American Back to Nature group. And we'll begin with the song.
Late one Monday evening, the smoke was thick and black. Neighborhood was set ablaze by cops on the attack. Shots were flying through the flames and neighbors looked concerned as firefighters stood and watched a block of buildings burned. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good.
They had dirt and they had garbage. Too many dogs and cats. Their children wandered naked. In their home they welcomed rats. They were loud and antisocial. They were violent and lewd. They were primitive and hostile. And they had to be subdued. So it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Their hair did not look proper. Their attitude was bad. Their radical ideas made decent people mad. We had to rout them out, you see. We had no other choice. The people here were all agreed in one disgusted voice. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh, but please don't call it a bomb. It was an entry device. Those weirdos wouldn't leave, even when we asked them nice. We tried water guns and tear gas just to get those groups to move. The bomb was not a good idea, though the mayor did approve. Cause it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Yes, it was urban renewal on the move from up above. Clearing out the riffraff from the city of brotherly love. So be sure to curb your lifestyle, clean your house and fold your kids. Or you may wind up a rubble heap within the city's grids. When it's urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh, yes, a family that would not move is now removed for good. Well, now a family that did not move is now removed for good.
And now here is an account with news media, mainstream news media, and also Ramona Africa, one of the MOVE folks, people who lived in the MOVE community, entitled "The Day the Police Dropped a Bomb on Philadelphia, I Was There." November 11th, 2020 is when it was posted and MOVE. The incident happened way back in 1985. In this episode of I Was There, Vice meets with Ramona Africa, one of the only survivors of the police bombing the residential neighborhood of Philadelphia, result of a conflict between the Philadelphia Police Department and the MOVE organization, the Black Liberation Group, in which Ramona belonged. Let's hear it, but you really, to get the full impact, you should go online to YouTube and see the Vice presentation. Vice is the company that is putting it out, V-I-C-E.
There is a small war underway on a street in Philadelphia tonight.
There was gunshots, thousands of rounds of bullets from the police.
Police moved in with tear gas and water cannon.
They wanted to kill our children.
I had recommended to use an explosive entry device.
The house shook. Smoke was coming in. So we knew they dropped the bomb on us.
Police allowed the blaze to burn an hour and a half before calling in firefighters.
I don't care what they said. There was no justification for what they did.
They done burn up two blocks. Explain that.
I never imagined that the government would drop a bomb on a row house in Philadelphia.
It's an embarrassment to the city of Philadelphia.
My name is Ramona Africa, and I was there when the police dropped a bomb on me and my family May 13th of 1985 and killed 11 of my family members. I was there. I was born and raised in West Philadelphia. I went to Temple University, and I was headed to law school. But after I met MOVE, I wanted to be a revolutionary. MOVE is a revolutionary organization founded by John Africa that believes in revolution, not in fighting and bloodshed, but true revolution. I joined MOVE in 1979. I was listening to what was happening with MOVE and could not believe that the cops were attacking MOVE the way they were.
Until today, there was a house in Philadelphia filled with people who for years confounded everybody. They called themselves MOVE and never said what that meant. They tried to live in the city as if it were the forest, ignoring modern plumbing, trash collection, or rat control. They offended the neighbors first and then the city, which ordered them out last year. Today, the city went to MOVE them.
As firemen crawled forward with a water hose, shots rang out.
The MOVE 9 were nine of our sisters and brothers who were arrested unlawfully for the murder of a police officer and given a 30 to 100-year sentence.
Last December, nine MOVE members went on trial for the death of Officer Ramp.
Everybody knew that MOVE did not kill a cop because MOVE was in the basement. Officer James Ramp was standing up on street level, and the media said he was shot on a downward angle. So there's no way that MOVE could have shot him.
They wear their hair in dreadlocks because they reject combs as symbols of industrialization, which their back-to-nature philosophy opposes. Their basic goal is to overthrow the present system of government, which they consider to be corrupt.
People thought MOVE was crazy at that time because of the media.
They spew out obscenities when they talk.
Terrible language.
Rizzo said that he wanted MOVE out of Philadelphia.
It's amazing that this group has been running loose now for a half a dozen, couple, three, 4 years that I know of, and they should have been in prison many, many months ago.
We moved into Osage Avenue because that was our headquarters. It was warm and loving. There was children there. We would take them to the park. That was mainly our day. Some people said we was on the loudspeaker day and night every day. That was just a lie, probably promulgated by the police along with the media. We were getting
May 3rd, 1985.
And nothing was going on. That's why we were surprised and shocked when hundreds of cops invaded our area trying to throw MOVE out of our home. And this was on Sunday, Mother's Day.
There is a small war underway on a street in Philadelphia tonight. It has been going on all day between hundreds of Philadelphia police and a bizarre back-to-nature group called MOVE.
Nothing happened all day, but that night, Gregor Sambor, the police commissioner, got on a loudspeaker and said, "Attention, MOVE, this is America. You had 15 minutes to come out." Well, obviously, we didn't come out because we knew they wanted to kill us. They didn't want to arrest us. They could have done that any time.
It was shortly before 6 a.m. when police moved in with tear gas and water cannon to evict members of the extremist group MOVE.
When we were in the basement for a while, we didn't feel anything. And then the water start coming down on us. I mean, rushing down on us.
What we intended to do was to create a diversion on the roof of the MOVE compound.
It was hard to breathe. Our children were soaking wet. And then they started with the tear gas.
Tear gas started coming in. We got the blankets and they was wet, and we put them over our heads and started laying down.
They blew a hole in the house to the left of us to try to come through it to come after us.
What we wanted them to do was to come out of the front of 6221 Osage and surrender.
We tried to get out after that. We tried to bring the kids out, and we shot back into the house.
A gun battle erupted.
They shot over 10,000 bullets. So that was their intent, to kill everybody in that house.
I don't think that they should kill the people and their babies. They should find another solution.
After that, that's when the silence was. It was a long interval of silence, and we didn't know what they were doing. We felt comfortable for a minute. And then the bomb was dropped. The house shook. It shook. And then we start feeling the heat and the smoke, which we knew wasn't tear gas. We knew there was a fire in the house. We heard the crackling of the trees that was in back of Osage.
The night skies over West Philadelphia, bright with flames. As many as 60 buildings may be on fire.
I was told, and I saw newspaper issues about people yelling to the firefighters to put the fire out. Why wasn't they putting the fire out?
They dropped the bomb on the house to take care of one move family. One move up, they done burn up two blocks. Explain that.
It was all in the newspaper that Sambor told the fire commissioner to let the fire burn.
The fire burned for an hour and a half before police called in firefighters. Tonight, it is unknown exactly how many MOVE members may have escaped the blaze or how many, perhaps, were trapped inside.
We all decided we was coming out, and we were bringing the children out of the house and hollering to the police, "We're coming out, we're bringing the children out." And their response was gunshots. Birdie was right behind me. So when I decided to come out, I grabbed him. And that's how we both got out of that house, that blazing inferno. Police grabbed me and arrested me and put handcuffs on my arms, even though I was burnt. And they grabbed Birdie and put him in a police van and took him away. I never saw him again. In the hospital, I was looking for the rest of my family to come in, and nobody came in behind me. And that's when I knew some of my family, at least, were dead.
Philadelphia police this morning continue searching for more bodies in the burned rubble of a West Philadelphia neighborhood.
One by one, more bodies of MOVE members were found in the rubble of their fortress home. The toll now higher than most had expected.
5 children and 6 adults. Nobody was ever arrested for the murder of my family. Nobody went to jail but me. I was arrested. I was the only one put on trial for arson, conspiracy, everything that they did. They charged me with. The jury found me guilty. I was sentenced to 16 months to 7 years. So I did the whole 7 years. I haven't been back to Osage Avenue since May 13th of 85. It was 61 or so houses burnt. It was damaged to the core. The people that lived on there took a while to come back. Some of them never came back.
City taxpayers spent $33 million to rebuild the houses.
The homes that was rebuilt, they had sinking foundations. They got leaky roofs. The electricity was messed up. They looked like project houses. Today, I still have the burn scars from May 13th of 85, and some people have told me, you should get cosmetic surgery. They can take that off. And I'm saying, why would I want to take it off? I want to be reminded. Our significance today is the consistent example of MOVE. Keep fighting, no matter what, because people can look at MOVE and say, I don't want to be in jail for 30 or 40 years. I don't want to die. I don't want to have a bomb dropped on me. But the thing is, you can die any day of the week in this country being killed by police. People ought to take the lesson from MOVE and stand up for what is right. As long as we can fight, we're going to fight.
Late one Monday evening, the smoke was thick and black. The neighborhood was set ablaze by cops on the attack. Shots were flying through the flames and neighbors looked concerned as firefighters stood and watched a block of buildings burned. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. They had dirt and they had garbage, too many dogs and cats. Their children wandered naked. In their home they welcomed rats. They were loud and antisocial. They were violent and lewd. They were primitive and hostile, and they had to be subdued. So it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Their hair did not look proper. Their attitude was bad. Their radical ideas made decent people mad. We had to rout them out, you see. We had no other choice. The people here were all agreed in one disgusted voice. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh, but please don't call it a bomb. It was an entry device. Those weirdos wouldn't leave even when we asked them nice. We tried water gun and tear gas just to get those kooks to move. The bomb was not a good idea, though the mayor did approve. Cause it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Yes, it was urban renewal on the move from up above. Clearing out the riffraff from the city of brotherly love. So be sure to curb your lifestyle, clean your house and fold your kids. Or you may wind up a rubble heap within the city's grids. When it's urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh, yes, a family that would not move is now removed for good. Well, now a family that did not move is now removed for good.
And we're going to conclude the show a little early without the flashback, because I found out the flashback only exists in very, very small part, and that's not good. So here's an interview I had, a brief interview with Troy, who called up to express concerns, which actually I played part of his initial call, like all of it actually, on the last show, or the show before the last. He's a resident of the Benchlands, and he describes his concerns about police behavior there.
We're talking with a resident of the Benchlands here. Today is September 20th. It's around 10 to 10 or thereabouts. And how would you like to be known? What should we call you?
Call me Tin Man.
Say that again?
The Tin Man.
Tin Man. All right. Well, listen, Tin Man. You've been in touch, with some thoroughness, trying to kind of clarify what's been happening to you as you live in the Benchlands, where you've been. How long have you been a resident there? And for the first few months, did you have any kind of contact with police?
Not particularly.
And in the first few months you were there, did you notice there was much police activity in the Benchlands at all from, you know, toward anybody?
Oh, yes. Actually, I do notice that it seems like I don't know, daily or otherwise they're down here looking for people. It's like this is the first place you come to find people, and every time they show up, they give a lot of the girls and stress, a lot of increased stress around here because people are worried about their men or their belongings or even their safety, their children's safety.
Right. Now, this happened even in the first month you were there, even before the more recent incidents, right?
Yes.
So, but these kind of, search and destroy or search and seize operations that the police were doing didn't affect you in the first month particularly?
No.
But then things changed and you gave me a call, is that right? And so what changed? And let's go back to that incident of what changed, which, by the way, I played a little bit of. We had a very brief interview about a week ago, and I played that, which I recorded, I think, with your permission. And it was, you gave a pretty accurate account about how you were, both threatened, ticketed, instructed to move, and then repeatedly accosted by police in what you felt was sort of unnecessarily restrictive and felt harassing. But that's my description. What would your description be?
Well, I would say it's a way to make us. They don't want to provide our needs, hot water. We can't have clean clothes, showers. They don't want to provide our needs or housing. They don't want to provide that for us. But they want to come in here and tell us how we should house ourselves. Are they going to call the building inspector next to come into the Benchlands and start fining us for building codes? Give me a break. We got mostly tents and ramshackle sheds and put up things that just survive and keep out the cold and keep out thieves. But pretty much we're pretty miserable, dirty, and cold, and they just don't care. It seems like they get their resources, and then they say they're out of the resources. So then they come down and harass us until we either leave or we get too messy and they make us leave or, whatever. But it's just like a vicious circle that doesn't help anybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to this first incident where you had contact with the police there. Describe for me again kind of what happened.
And I asked him if I could camp out near them. And Jack was making a bigger pavilion tent type thing. And when they came by, they just came by and told him that he hadn't had that big of a building and it has to be here and it can't be there. And he's got to move it over to there. And just a bunch of other orders and rules that he must comply with or be fined or removed.
And what did Jack do?
He complied.
And how long ago was this?
About a week ago.
And when was the next encounter with the police?
first interview, he said that I couldn't stay near him. I'd like to get my own spot, so that's what I did.
Huh. And so,
since I moved to my new spot, they haven't come to by me to complain about anything.
I see. So you had one encounter with the police, and that had to do, as I understand it, not just with this large tent, but also with a so-called excavation?
Yeah, that was JP.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he had gotten a fine for excavating, and he told him to remove it because he had shored up the dirt wall and put pallets down so he could have a crew space to keep our perishables cooler than the outside temperature.
And this was at your spot with...
It was right next to it, yep.
And this was the spot you eventually moved away from, or the spot you were still at?
The spot I moved away from. And let me tell you something, they had to work almost like 2 days to put it in, and then they had to work a whole another 2 days to tear it all out. Same with Jack. I mean, he was working after he made it all good, and then they came by and told him... he had to change it, and he was exhausted. I mean, you just see him, he couldn't even barely stand up because he had to do it in so much time. And it's just harassment, as far as I'm concerned. He's got no business coming down here telling us where to put what. I mean, as long as we don't blow nothing up or nothing and try to keep our garbage clean,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Now, was there much, this has been talked about a bit last week when we were at the Huff meeting, and maybe at the union meeting, that there have been fires, occasional fires in the camp area, and in fact that even the city has responded finally, or someone has responded, by providing fire extinguishers?
Yes, actually, I did see a few around here.
And what is there much of a fire danger? Did your tents pose a fire danger? Do you see much of a fire danger in the camp?
Technology, and myself in the morning, I take a little alcohol and a piece of tissue to heat up a can of water so I can have some hot coffee.
And I guess there's no
speak for everybody else.
I mean, I know when there was a camp almost a year ago in San Lorenzo Park, higher up in the upper part of the park. There was a thing called the Comrades Cafe that some house people set up to sort of provide a common kitchen. There's no common kitchen in the Benchlands, or am I mistaken?
There's a guy has a coffee and sodas for sale. You can buy from him. As far as the common kitchen, the only person that really provides meals and that for most people here is John Paul. He cooks regularly and he feeds a lot of people that come to that don't have food or need stuff. So he's really good at that.
What's the average meal, let's say, that John Paul cooks?
For 20 people, at least 20 or 30 people. And usually the price tag runs around, $30 to $60.
And what kind of food does John Paul serve up?
Breakfast, French toast, he makes burgers, he makes, sometimes he makes stir fry or macaroni and cheese and hamburger and peanut butter jelly sandwiches or all kinds of stuff. I love that.
Had a fucking mouth.
And when was the last time you sampled some of this cuisine?
The other day. It's very good. He's very good.
Did you commend the cook and pat him on the back?
Oh, yes. He should probably get a federal grant for feeding the homeless, Food Without Bombs has. So, you know what I mean? He should get more donations because he does a lot, and he doesn't have a lot of help in cleaning.
Is there much donation coming in to some people like John Paul to provide these meals?
Not really.
Not
monetarily. I mean, they give you canned goods and box goods that are pretty much garbage. I'm doing an interview. Hold on. Yeah.
Okay. You got to get going because you got an appointment. Have other people been facing the kind of police involvement that you've been facing recently in the last few days?
Actually, I don't know, but I just know that in the last few days, the police seem to be now going through the three to four times a day, and at least one time a day, seems to come here with their lights on and looking for somebody, or I don't know what they're doing, but they show up, like, and, I don't know, it's just weird, I suppose.
Well, it sounds like it's taking its toll on you, Tin Man. Well, I appreciate this update, and I want to let you get your appointment on time. Maybe you can kind of give me a follow-up at some point if you feel like it.
Yeah, for the closing statement, I just say that, you know, people are dying, and we need more help to live and be successful, or to get out of this pit we're in, because obviously everything they're doing is they're not leaving us in the pit and trying to make us comfortable here. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to be in a pit and be comfortable. I want to get out of the pit and be productive. I mean, all of us have gifts and talents and abilities society could use. It's just they're ignorant as to how to help us. And if they gave us housing, they could figure all that out. You know what I mean?
I think I do. I'll be playing this on Thursday, and I'll probably be talking to you before then, and you can call me at any point, though we sometimes have to pay a little tag to get in touch.
All right, Robert. I do want to talk to you about other matters, too, so look forward to talking to you again, okay?
Hey, good to hear you, Tin Man.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And that's it for today's Bathrop Spears Broadside Show. Glad you could listen if you did. And we're a little shorter than usual, but we're a little time constrained, and I want to try to get this one out on time. Perhaps we'll do better in the future, or perhaps it won't make that much difference. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any thoughts, reports, criticism, corrections, you can always give me a call. 831-423-4833. There's also a meeting of the Homeless Union and those who are supporting the Benchlands encampment Friday, the 24th of September, tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the 23rd, at the tables right between the county building and the Benchlands. Check it out if you're interested, and if you want to be supportive, just give me a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF. You take care. Talk to you again.
As soon as I learned to tell time, I no longer listened. I was born at 12:30 in the morning. By 1 a.m. I was certain that I would no longer remember my past. By 1:40 I had forgotten my name. By 2:12 the ancients had bid me farewell. By 2:30 I had swallowed a foreign brand. By 2:40 I had begun to hallucinate. It's all coming back to me. It's all coming back to me. I met my parents' spirit guides at 4:30. It was they who told me of the sun. It was not what I expected. It only seemed to hint at light. I met my parents' spirit guides at 4:30. It was they who told me of the sun. It was not what I expected. It only seemed to hint at light. By 6:17, I had decided what I wanted to be. By 6:18, I discovered my shell. At 6:19, I began the process of dying. At 7 o'clock, I made an attempt to be perfectly still and jumped when I felt my soul fidget. At the moment I learned to tell time, I no longer listened. When I began to tell time, I began to no longer listen.
Well, the rising of the sung about again, and the deportees live on through the power of his pen. And now he's bound for a glory all his own,